This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Welcome to Over the Influence. It's fabulous to have you listening. We can say at this point, Merry flipping Christmas, because you're going to be downloading this on Christmas Day. And have we got a special episode for you to enjoy. A quick reintroduction as to who we are. We're very, very giddy today. Ben, more so than me, probably. And it will all become apparent as to why. My name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I'm 50. I'm actually 50 now, 50 and 5 years alcohol-free. If you'd have told me this would have been happening when I hit my 40s, I'd have said, don't be ridiculous, and just simply got pissed. Anyway, I changed everything just before my 45th birthday, and hands down, it's been the best decision I've ever made in my life. I tell you what as well, on this sober journey, you never know where it's going to go, and you never know the people you're going to meet. And we just can't wait to get into this episode today. Ben, are you okay, hon? Merry Christmas, by the way.
Merry Christmas, Sharon. It's lovely to be spending Christmas Day with you in November when we're pre-recording this podcast. Did you get everything you wanted?
I'm always a good girl, so yes.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
Hello, I'm Ben. I'm 35. I live in Liverpool. I am husband to Jem. I am dad to Leo, stepdad to Alfie and Millie. This is my fourth alcohol-free Christmas. So I've been alcohol-free for 3.5 years, but it was December 2019 that I had a particularly heavy December, had a particularly ridiculous row with Jem on the 23rd or 24th, which is completely my fault, all started by me and escalated by me. And she said, look, we're not going to have a very nice Christmas if you're going to be drinking like this all the way through it. So I went, fine, I'll stop. This is my kind of, you know, I was thinking about removing alcohol. And you know what? I had the best Christmas ever. And I'm sure that that helped to cement my decision to go fully alcohol free in July the following year. Shaz has asked me if I'm all right, because I am a bit of a fat super fan. Yes. Fanboy. Yes. But you know, at the same time, Shaz, we've got our friend on the podcast.
It's our mate. It's our actual friend.
Which is very cool. Look, you did a big intro.
Are you sure? I don't want to take anything away from you today, but it's Christmas Day. This could be my gift to you.
If you get anything wrong, I will correct you.
Right. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. We are excited about this one. It does feel like we're talking to a friend, which sounds absolutely bonkers when we say that, but we say it so often, alcohol-free life, it is bonkers, it is madness. It gives us great pleasure to welcome to the podcast on Christmas Day, although we are recording before Christmas Day, but it'll all make sense when you start listening, the one and only Ruth Jones, actress, author, all-round fabulous woman, and over a year alcohol-free. Ruth, welcome to Over the Influence.
Thank you, and a merry, merry Christmas. Nadolig Llawen I chi gyd.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. What did that mean?
Oh, it's Welsh.
It means Merry Christmas, everyone. Is that right? Yeah, I worked for a bit in Capital Cymru, the radio station, the Welsh-speaking capital. Without speaking any Welsh, that was an interesting job. Anyway, Ruth Jones, MBE. Sorry, Sharon.
Sorry. Sorry, my mistake, Ruth. Apologies.
Can I start, Shaz? Would you mind?
Please do. Jump in. Go for
Ruth,
it.
Ruth, are we friends?
Of course we're friends. Of course we're friends.
Cool.
Yes, yeah. I feel I've known you. You see, the thing is, I probably listened to you much more than you've listened to me, because I started listening to Over the Influence, I think, I'm trying to remember when it was, whether it was during when the pandemic started. I remember the first episode I listened to was the interview you had with lovely Lee Mengo.
OMG,
the gay sober.
He's just the best.
Lee and I work together a lot. We worked on Stella, and he's just fantastic. And I got in touch with him afterwards, and I just said, oh God, I just heard you on Over the Influence. So I think my friend had recommended Over the Influence. I have a friend who she and I were always sort of to-ing and fro-ing, not drinking for weeks and then drinking. And she said, she's a northern lass like you. She's from Cumbria. And she said, she said, that Over the Influence, that's really good. Started listening. Lee Menger was on there. And I just thought, oh, that was fantastic. And then I listened ever since, really. And I used to, it must have been during the pandemic. Because is that when you started?
We did. We started literally the week that Boris Johnson announced the first lockdown. So we're going back now to 2020.
Yes. Yeah. I used to go for my walk and I would listen to the podcast on the way. And of course, you were sort of in the background. You were background Ben.
He was background Ben.
And I was just imagining you sort of like Mr. Producer. And I pretty much have listened every week ever since. So you definitely are my friends.
and you know, from background, now I'm your favourite as well, which is so nice of you to send me on a private email that you...
Oh, God, don't push it up, all right?
It was really weird, though, when you got in touch with us, because you slid into our inboxes and said, look, you know, I've been listening for ages and da-da-da-da-da. And me and Shad had a conversation. We went, is that Ruth Jones? You know, but it's just mad how, you know, this little project that we started has now led us to being friends with someone that I've admired for many, many, many years.
Bless you. And we went to the same university, didn't we?
We did. Yeah.
Yes, we did. We're both old Warwickonians. It is funny, is it? I suppose it's a combination of how the world moves on, and so technology and communication is so much better now. And that means that people are able to talk more about what's going on for them in their lives. And maybe people are a bit more open about stuff. And plus, running parallel with that is the fact that so many people are stopping drinking now, just because it gets in the way. Not for any, you know, obviously some people just go, oh my God, it's messed my life up. But so many people are just going, oh God, just really don't need this in my life. And I think that's sort of run parallel. And so now, you know, we have this amazing podcast that you do. There are other podcasts as well, which I know that you celebrate and that you enjoy listening to other podcasts. And I just think it's fantastic that there's this big community of people who are kind of, for want of a better phrase, like-minded and sort of want to enjoy life without sticking alcohol and engine fuel into their systems.
Can we talk a little bit more about that, Ruth, about the reasons for stopping drinking and the reasons why you might have removed alcohol from your life? Because as Ben says, and he repeats this a lot week in, week out on the podcast, within the community as well, and it's such an important point. Nobody needs a rock bottom. It doesn't need to become absolutely diabolical in order to change your relationship with alcohol. You know, I sometimes think, God, where would I be if I'd have carried on drinking? In fact, we did a premium podcast special a couple of weeks ago and a community member asked that question. Shaz, if you were still drinking now, where do you think you'd be? And it actually frightened me, that the thought of it, possibly a rock bottom. Do you know what I mean? But you don't need to wait for that, do you?
No.
Would you mind sharing with us why you've decided to stop drinking?
Yeah, sure. I'll give you a bit of a history of it, shall I? There's a little bit of a, I don't have a very straightforward journey with my reaching my decision to stop drinking. So look, pretty much the same as a lot of people, drinking cider at youth club, all of that stuff as a teenager. And then going to university, the cheap drinks. I mean, I remember going to the union in the first week and they had a drink called Strawberry Cup and it was 99p for a bottle, like a full bottle of this stuff. It was disgusting. And, you know, but drinking was part of the whole landscape, as it is for, you know, for so many young people. And that kind of carried on. And then I remember in my 30s, a friend said to me, I remember going to Spain. We were in Spain together and he was in a villa. It wasn't like a kind of like a big Benidorm sort of holiday or anything. And I wanted to get more to drink than she did. And she went, well, we don't really need any more, do we? And I was like, oh, really? Because I've been so used to, yeah, let's just get drunk. That's what you do. That's what you do when you get together. And she said, I just think at the age of 30, I remember it because she said, I think at the age of 37, staggering around drunk is a bit embarrassing. I was like, oh God, you know, and it really kind of hit me, but it just had always been part of the landscape. And I think a lot of my friends had kids, so they had to, I mean, you'll know this, Ben, being a new father, you know, they did the thought of getting drunk and looking after a young baby, getting up in the middle of the night, just horrendous. So, but I wasn't having babies. And so I was still in that kind of like party mode. And I think I started to work in TV and it meant going away to work. So often you'd be put up in a hotel and you'd be filming the next day. But to me, it was always, oh yeah, so, you know, we're going to the bar tonight. And when I look back, I think, oh gosh, you know, what a shame to think of the evenings as a time when it was a job that you've been so lucky to get this TV job and then to just go to the bar and then drink a load of water before you go to bed so that you don't feel too bad first thing in the morning. And it is what it is and it was what it was. But I think looking back now, I just think, oh, I could have made so much more of those opportunities had I taken alcohol out of the equation. And I think when I reached 40, that was just around the time when Gavin and Stacey was starting. So I think I turned 40 in the September and we started filming the first series of Gavin and Stacey in the October. And, you know, this kind of socializing thing carried on through that. I had Christmas and then it was the sort of in between, like about the 27th of December. And I just thought, oh God, I feel like I'm not even really enjoying drinking red wine. It just isn't even hitting the spot anymore. It's just not enjoyable. And I think it was around just before, I remember because New Year's Eve, I didn't drink. And I think the day before New Year's Eve, I just went, that's it, I'm going to stop. And I stopped. And I stopped for 8.5 years. 8.5 years. And those years were, at the start, it was really hard because I'd got so used to it and being Christmas, you know, sort of New Year time. And it had become such a habit, like it is for so many people, that, you know, you come home at the end of the day and you open a bottle of wine. That was what was sort of happening. So getting out of that habit was difficult. And then, of course, you have all those first occasions that you get through. So, you know, there would have been, I remember actually, the first test for me was my friend's hen party in Dublin. And I can remember phoning her up and feeling like worried that I was going to have to tell her that I was going to come to her hen party and I wasn't going to be drinking. And she was fine about it, but it was like, how can you go to a hen party and not drink? And I think I spent it with one of the friends. We just bought a load of cake and spent a lot of the time in the hotel room, if I remember rightly. But there were things like that, you know, then you had the summertime to get through and then my birthday came around again and gradually it was okay. You know, I had Christmas. I had almost a year then by the time I had my very first alcohol-free Christmas. And to be honest with you, it's such a long time ago now, I can't quite remember how that Christmas was. But I went through those years and there were occasions when I really missed having a drink. I remember we went, and this is sounding like I'm being very name-droppy now and sort of showbiz, but we filmed the Tom Jones Comic Relief special. You know, we did a recorded Islands in the Stream for Comic Relief. And we went out to Vegas to film it. And it was a brilliant experience. And thank goodness I wasn't drinking in lots of ways, because I was also doing a radio show for Radio Wales at the time. And because of the time difference, my husband, who was producing it, was with me. We had to go to a really weird little studio in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of it seemed like it was in the middle of the desert, at 2 o'clock in the morning because of the time difference, so that we could do this show live. And, you know, there's no way I could have done that if I'd been drinking. But everybody else had gone out after filming and had a drink. And I remember really feeling actually upset and frustrated that I couldn't go and have a drink. And I can remember things like at the end of Gavin and Stacey, when we finished the last episode of the series, that was such an emotional time, such a big event. And I can remember thinking, oh, you know, I want to go and party and I can't. And there was a lot of this sort of real frustration and feeling like I was missing out. But those times, they didn't happen often. And the majority of times, I would be always going, oh, so glad I don't drink. It was so much more convenient. I could drive everywhere. I could feel good in the mornings. I made more of my day. You know, all of these things were, without a shadow of a doubt, there was more positives to not drinking than to drinking. And then I have no idea why, but in, I think it was 2015 and it was March and it was a summer's evening and something just clicked and I went, oh, I'm going to have a drink tonight. And I did. And I really enjoyed it. And the next day I said, right, that's it now. That was a one-off and I really enjoyed it. Glad I did it. And now it's done. That's never going to happen. I think once you've picked that little stitch, it just starts unraveling. And what's weird is that if I knew then what I know now, I would have been able to say to myself, okay, that happened and it's not the end of the world. It's like Annie Grace very much says, like, if you were doing an exam, if you got 75% in the exam, you'd go, oh, that's brilliant. I mean, I think like isn't a first in a university, like 70% or something. But to give yourself a hard time for not getting 100%, It's bonkers. And yet that was the sort of attitude I felt because I thought left it like maybe it was a few days and then I had a drink again. And then I started going, oh, well, what's the point? Oh, well, I've started drinking again now. So what's the point? And it's just a really crazy way to look at it. And so that continued up until I think I came to 2016. I'm sorry to give you all these dates, but I was trying to remember how it all went. And I got to my 50th and just about a couple of months before my 50th, I just thought, right, I've got to stop. I think I drank from that for about maybe a year and I'm stopping again. And I didn't. And I had my 50th was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. When I compare that to my 40th, which was I was drunk, like partying, had a great time with all my friends, but I really suffered like the headaches and, you know, it was not pleasant in the after effects. But my 50th, I had this big sit down dinner, posh black tie do. It was all my family and friends, all the, like people like my godmother, people who'd known me since I was a baby, just kind of, it wasn't like a big show busy event or anything like that. And it was lovely. It was so lovely. And I remembered every moment of it. And that carried on for some time. And then I just went through this sort of period of really battling with trying to get back. You know, I'd have a drink again and drink for a few days. And then I'd go into another phase of not drinking. And during that time is when I read Annie Grace's book. And that, as I know it has for many, many people, that really turned things around for me because it was all about that idea of not thinking of it in terms of giving something up, but in terms of reaching a point where it becomes, the alcohol becomes insignificant. And so, you know, I know she says, I can drink as much as I want to, whenever I want to, I just choose not to. And it just made me feel so calm. It was like everything sort of fell into place. And since I think I reached, I was sort of on and off, and I would do like the Annie Grace that sometimes they do like these 5-day experiments, and they were great. I found the other day, I should have kept it actually. I found a chart that I did where I'd set myself a 40-day alcohol free period. And I think it was when I was like writing my second book maybe, and it was this whole thing of trying to hold on, that sort of white knuckling. And I don't know what clicked. I have no idea how it happened, but I reached my birthday again and it was in September 2022. And it was just after the Queen had died, and I loved the Queen. I'm not embarrassed to say that. I thought she was great. And I felt really sad when she died, but not because, like, obviously I didn't know her personally, but it, for me, it was an end of an era, and it was coinciding with all the stuff that was going on in the world. And I just thought, oh my gosh. And I had a few kind of like celebratory drinks over that time, reached my birthday, and I just thought, right, that's it now. I'm stopping. And I initially said, I'm going to stop for a year, but I knew in my heart I wanted it out of my life. That was it. And so I told people, because it felt easier in a way to say to people, oh, I'm stopping drinking for a year, because then they didn't kind of go, like if I'd said, oh, I'm not drinking anymore, I didn't want the hassle of them going, oh, why not? No. Whereas if you go, oh, this is what I'm doing for a year. It's like if you go, I'm training for a marathon, or you've set yourself this target. People tend not to sort of nag you, because it doesn't half bother people when you're not drinking. Most people are okay about it, but some people are really like, why have you stopped? And I always think, you know, like if you said, I don't smoke, you don't get people go, why don't you smoke? Why? Smoking's great. I used to do that as well. So yeah, so I did that, and it just feels, I feels very, very calm. I feel very, I don't know why it's different. I think I drink Heineken Zero and those kind of drinks maybe more now than I did when I've stopped drinking before. I don't know if that's made a difference. Gordon's Zero Gin, I really like. I was quite into that at the start of when I stopped, and then now doesn't sort of bother me so much. And I haven't, when people say to me, why have you stopped drinking? I go, I just don't have the time for a hangover. I don't have the inclination to get drunk. And I can have a really good time without alcohol. And it's really that simple. And I feel like I've just talked and talked and talked.
And we've been so happy to listen and listen and listen. Yeah, it's been so good. I just want to jump in there, Ruth, and say, I mean, oh my God, we've got so much in common, me and you, Ruth. We really, really have.
You've got a much glitzier top on than I have. Can I just say? You look much more Christmassy than I do.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Yep. Listen to this on Christmas Day. Merry Christmas. Everything you were saying there about your birthday celebrations, it was just the same for me. So when I turned 40, it was a debacle. Hilarious and crazy and noisy and music and drink and drink and drink. But it wasn't just that 40th event. It was before it, you know, leading up to it. It was after it. The day after, I thought I was going to die. Fast forward to the 50th that I've just had a couple of weeks ago, it was just, as you've used the words there, the calmest, the quietest, the most wonderful celebration. And the two couldn't have been more different. But it's not a coincidence, is it? And this isn't just specific to women at all, but I do think it's very much age-related. You know, Ben says, you get drunk through your 20s at university. You mentioned that drink. My drink at uni was Blast Away for a quid, and it was a Diamond Y and a Castaway.
It's like a toilet cleaner, doesn't it?
It tasted like toilet cleaner, and it was horrific. It was.
When I was at Warwick, Ruth, it was the Eliminator. And they used to just take things off the shelf. And I'm sure there wasn't actually a recipe to it. They'd just take things off the shelf and just put them in. Oh, it's actually making me feel a bit ill. Awful. It was green. Horrible.
Oh, mine was green. So you do that in your 20s thinking, oh, this is a lol a minute. Your 30s, you carry on. You hit 40, Ruth, and you're like, hang on a minute. I can't keep doing this. But it just shows you what you've been saying there. The seeds are planted, aren't they, that quite a long time prior to removing alcohol. So tell us, what has this last year been like for you? Because it was an absolute delight. I've got to say this, for myself and Ben and some of our community members that are on this call now watching this recording, to be chatting to you in this misty car park somewhere in South Wales. Ben was late. He was lost. We've got like community members going, Is that Ruth Jones?
I mean, I am not a fitness person at all, but I remember seeing on the website that you were doing a walk, and it was on the 23rd of September, and it was in Penavan in the Brecon Beacons. And I just thought, I'd heard of Penavan. I knew people had done it before. And I just thought, oh my God, if this is meant to be, the 23rd of September will be my 1 year anniversary over the influence of doing this walk. I've got to do it. And I came with my friend who also listens to the podcast. And it was just the most gorgeous day. I mean, getting up at the Cracker Sparrows and then coming and finding you in this car park. Because I should say, I did not do the really full on, what was it, 9-10 miles that you did? Like, it was really
It was something like that. Yeah, we did like the extended route. But because you're so bloody showbiz and so busy, you had to go to a book signing or something, didn't you? You were like, Sars.
So I was doing a book signing in the evening down in Apple. Oh God, I can't remember the name. See, that's my brain, my menopause brain. Yeah, so I had to get down to Devon that evening. So that was another reason why I couldn't do it. But I wouldn't have been fit enough to do what you did. And it just felt like it was so nice to just meet you all in the car park. Because, you know, you hear these names. Appledore, thank you. Thank you, Tracy. Yes, Appledore Festival. So it was lovely. And the weather was beautiful. And it just all felt really, I don't know, meant to be anyway. And it was so nice. It was so nice to meet you. Because you hear people's voices. And I don't think I've ever really watched. Maybe I've seen a couple of the videos of the podcast, but mainly I've listened. And so then to meet you, it was really lovely, really lovely space.
One of the things that people kept saying after that, because you were so, you know, you came and you had photos with everybody and just giving everyone hugs, and everyone was saying afterwards, oh, she's so normal. But I just thought that was a really interesting comment because, you know, you are a normal person. Like, I think people listening to this now will be going, oh God, Ruth, she's so normal. But when you're saying things like, you know, when you have that drink and you start to unpick the stitches. Mm. We had a guy who's a member of our community who said that I'm gonna go back to drinking, but only on special occasions. And then he rejoined the community about 3 months later because he goes, I can't tell you how many special occasions I've had in the last. you start finding special occasions. Yeah. When you were saying about how long you've been thinking about removing alcohol before you did as well, you know, that's another thing that we did in the premium podcast, didn't we, Shaz, a few months back now, which was the how old are you now? How old were you when you removed alcohol, and how old were you when you started thinking that actually removing alcohol for you would be a good idea? And the average answer came back about 10 years, didn't it, Shaz?
Which
is mad. But I think this conversation that we're having is like every other episode of Over the Influence. My question is, because you're very well known as an actress, you're very well known as a writer, you've had a fabulous career and a lot of people know who you are and love your work. Do you feel like because you're in the limelight, are celebs held to different standards than normal people, in inverted commas?
I think it's interesting. I know that I'd had a conversation about my coming on the podcast because obviously this is in the public domain. So there's no reason why a journalist can't just go, take some direct quotes from me and make a big thing about Ruth Jones and alcohol. Even though, to my mind, there isn't a big thing, but newspapers are in a terrible, terrible state. So clickbait is really, really valuable. And unfortunately, if you are remotely well-known, I mean, remotely well-known, then it's fodder for clickbait. So, you know, and that's, I thought long and hard about it, and I just thought, that's just a risk to take. And I mean, I've done interviews about my book, so I'm not going to embarrass you, Sharon, and ask you if you've actually managed to finish my third book yet.
Oh my God, can I answer the question? Can I answer the question? And please don't tell me off. I am the world's slowest reader. So it's been to Italy with me. Okay. I took it to Italy in, was it October? It's just come back from Barbados, right? So another holiday, Ruth, and I'll finish it. Okay. But I'm still on with it.
I mean, what I was going to say was in all three of my novels, I've got somebody who's got an alcohol problem.
Yes. Yes, you have.
and alcohol has caused them problems in their life. And I mean, I just, that was, you know, it's like people say, oh, are they based on real people? Do you know that? And I say, no, it's my imagination, and that's why I'm a writer. But I think it's creatively, it's interesting to write about people who have addictions. And I've, you know, apart from cigarettes, I've not really had an addiction. And I don't even know how you would define an addiction. But I just think those characters that I've had are very interesting for the reader. But of course, what happens is then I do an interview and then people will say, so did you write about that from personal experience? And you have to be so on the ball, because you know that they will take your answer and turn it into something that it isn't, and, you know, make out that that's from your personal experience or whatever. So obviously, if you are in the public eye in any measure at all, then you do, and you talk about something which is so common. I mean, so many people go, oh, I've been thinking about my drinking. I think I might try and knock it on the head. So many people say that. And yet, when it's put into the context of a sort of tabloid story, it suddenly becomes something sordid and problematic, and the term alcohol problem gets bandied around. Whereas you wouldn't get that if somebody said they gave up smoking or if they gave up sugar. You just wouldn't get it. So it's a risk to take. But on the other hand, I just think, oh, well, get over yourself. I mean, just, you know, this is a great podcast. It's a great community. And it's all about everybody sharing, you know, their own experiences. And there's no point in being precious about it. It is what it is, isn't it?
We've always got your back, Ruth. You just send them our way. She has to be really mean when she wants to be.
I'll sort them out. Sort them out, Ruth.
We are really, really grateful for you doing this tonight, because I think it's hugely important. You do have a big following, and to be able to speak about these things and just say, look, you know, yeah, there wasn't a rock bottom, but my life's better without it. You know, that's such a powerful message to send. Yeah. And it is, you know, it's taken us 3.5 years to kind of work out what our philosophy on this whole thing actually is. But that kind of underpins it, really.
Yeah, exactly.
You can choose to, because you want to, and stuff everyone else, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I did a book signing back in July, I think it was. And I talk about this in this article I wrote for Good Housekeeping. Is I wrote this article, join me and have an alcohol-free Christmas. And I mentioned this in the article, which is that I was at a book signing and this woman came up to me, and she works for a very well-known beer company. And she asked me if I would do a video message for her team, because they were in competition with another team in somewhere else in the country, blah, blah, blah. I don't know if I would normally do something like that, but I wouldn't be that bothered about doing it. But I just said, do you know what? I'm not going to, because I don't drink. And so it just feels a bit odd. And she went, oh, right. We do an alcohol-free version. And I went, yes, I know that. But no, I'm still not going to do it. Sorry. And she was with her mother, and her mother said, oh, why do you not drink? Did you have a problem? And I went, no, I just don't want to put engine fuel into my body. And she went,
I've got stuff to write. I've got musicals to star in. I've got stuff on. Isn't that a good enough reason?
Isn't it a shame?
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah. It is, but people they just don't get it. I mean, I remember my dad, God bless him, when I do my 8.5 year alcohol-free period. I remember my dad saying to me, I think I was about 3 or 4 years in, and I went to that and he said, do you want a gin and tonic? And I went, well, no, dad, I don't drink. I haven't had a drink for 4 years. Oh, and you want one now then? You know, like you said, oh, you haven't had one for so long. Oh, we'll have one now then. And I do think maybe it's a difficult one to compute, because it's so prevalent. It's everywhere. It's happy hour. I can't actually believe that they're still allowed to advertise on TV, but hey ho. You've got to be so careful that you don't end up sounding really pious and self-righteous as well. So I also do firmly believe It's none of my business. It's none of my business if somebody wants to drink, but equally, it's none of their business if I don't.
That's it. And it's about choice, isn't it? And it's about acceptance and just you doing you. And, you know, I don't know if I should laugh or not, but when that lady said to you, oh, so you can't drink then. I've had people say to me, you know, oh, isn't it a shame that you can't? And I'm like, you know what? Well, I can, and I'll do what I want when I want. But it's getting your head around the fact that people these days are now choosing not to, because it's so much better. Like Ben said, you know, you're busy. You've got other stuff to be doing.
And I do think as well that I'm not kind of all Pollyanna about it, in the sense that, and I don't want to decry anybody who says that their life is amazing without drinking, because of course, for loads of people, I can understand that feeling of oh my God, this is amazing. I would say, as I know you've said on the podcast, life's problems are still there. There's still stress in life. There's still lots going on, but it's just so much easier without drinking. The number of times, I mean, I've had a really, really full-on year, and the number of times I've gone, like, oh, thank God, I don't drink.
The relief.
I saw my friend today, and she said to me, she went, oh, imagine if you'd had to do all this and you were still, like, drinking wine every night or something. She said, you wouldn't be able to do it. I went, no, it wouldn't. None of it would have happened. None of it would have happened. So...
got a weird question, and I'm not quite sure how to phrase it, so please bear with me as I kind of bumble through this one. But do you think people might find it difficult to compute when you say, oh, actually I don't drink, because they're looking at you when you say it? And what I mean by that is that Gavin and Stacey was a phenomenal worldwide success. Nessa as a character captured people's hearts and imaginations throughout that whole series. Obviously, she had a cigarette in her mouth and a pint in her hand for a lot of the time. And obviously, you are Ruth Jones. You are not Nessa. But I imagine that people yell, what's occurring at you in the street occasionally. You know,
yeah.
Do you think that the character that is so beloved on screen, being associated with that kind of lifestyle, do you think that might make it difficult to compete for people?
I think people, whether it's related to drinking alcohol or not, I think people sometimes do expect me to be like my characters. They're hugely disappointed when they meet me, because it's like I'm not anything like them. So yeah, there possibly is something in that their idea of who I am is they've got from the characters that I portray. So, which is understandable. I mean, I'm sure I've met people who are known for being a specific character and then found that they're nothing like it. It's like Audrey on Coronation Street. She talks really posh, doesn't she, in real life?
Yeah. I met her backstage at the Liverpool Empire. I can't remember what she was doing. It might have been a panto. But I was like,
yeah.
Who are you?
Yeah,
it's interesting that you know, you were filming Gavin and Stacey whilst you were alcohol free. That is, have I got the timeline right there?
The second and third series, yes, yeah, the second and third series, but not the first series. So yeah, what I found in the sort of the first time round, as it were, with not drinking, was just gives you so much more energy and also, oh gosh, well. Sorry to go down the menopausal route, but as you may not have experienced, Sharon, one of the things that comes with menopause is anxiety. It's hideous. It's hideous. And the thought of that being compounded with the beer fear that you get with a hangover, oh, dear God. I mean, just impossible, impossible. So that's another reason. There's just so many reasons not to drink. And sometimes I kind of like go, am I living in a parallel universe where people why don't they realize what they're doing? And then I think, oh, you're sounding really self-righteous now. But it isn't that. It's like I've had a realization. The only thing is that I would say, obviously, because I didn't drink for 8.5 years, there's always this little voice at the back of my mind going, oh, well, is it going to happen? Is it going to happen again? Am I going to, you know, I don't want to wish my life away. That's the thing. I don't want to go, oh, in 5 years' time, I'll be 6.5 years alcohol free. I want to enjoy the days. Because honestly, once you reach, well, I'm 57 now, you do start going, I've got less time ahead of me than I have behind me. I've got to make the most of these days. And that is another reason why I wanted to knock alcohol in the head. The same with sugar, really, if I'm honest. I think sugar's pretty bad for the system. And I go through phases of not having sugar or you know, a lot of processed carbohydrates. I always feel better when I don't do that. So, you know, it's in terms of a healthy choice to not drink, that's definitely part of it. And it's so nice going to the doctors when you have your checkups for things, you know, and you have to fill out those forms and they go, how much alcohol do you consume? And you can say zero, you know?
It's the best.
Then isn't it always really disappointing when they don't like go, oh my God, well, that's amazing. I want them to make more of a fuss.
Yeah. And they did have... one of the tests is they do like a kind of liver test or something. And, you know, that he said, oh, that you've got really scored really high on all these things. And that feels good because you're getting payback then for the effort you've put in, you know?
Mm. Yeah. You will be listening to this now on Christmas Day. Again,
Merry Christmas.
Ruth, we must talk about the article that you wrote for Good Housekeeping magazine, and as well, thank you so much for the plugs that you gave over the influence in that. It's such a good read. How did all that come about?
So I met with the editor of Good Housekeeping, and it was back in a year previously. It was just around the time, it must have been when Love Untold was coming out, and I did a book event. And I sort of met her a few times. She's lovely. And I said to her, I'd really like to write a piece for you about having an alcohol-free Christmas. And I said, and I've just started a year of not drinking. So come next Christmas, can I write an article for you? And she said, yes. And in a way, you know, sometimes when you put these things out there, it's like, oh, right, I've committed to do that now. So it sort of like helps. And for some people, it may not help. It may have the opposite effect. But anyway, so I committed to doing this article and I really enjoyed it. And what I wanted to do was to say, why wait till January? Why wait to do dry January? Why not do a dry December? And, you know, people, they go, what? You can't do Christmas without alcohol. Well, you can, and it's like, well, what about all the parties and stuff? Well, it is feasible and possible to do. And I think, again, if you go, right, I'm going to stop. I mean, we're on Christmas Day now, but I think at the start of December, when you go, I'm going to have a dry December. And once you've made that commitment, it's like, again, to go on about Annie Grace, but I do think she's phenomenal in it with her book. She says it's easier to make a really clear-cut decision than it is to go, like you mentioned about the community member who said, oh, I'm going to just drink on special occasions. Because once you start putting all these conditions in your head, it just gets really, really confusing. Whereas if you just go, no, I don't drink alcohol, go to all the parties. There's so many things you can do and still enjoy yourself. Now, Christmas Day, for people who maybe listening in the morning and you're kind of on the fence about whether to, all I would say is it's such a lovely, magical day. I know that not everybody's in the same boat, and some people will maybe not be having a great Christmas, but that's even another reason to not make things like unpleasant by drinking alcohol. Life is just, and Christmas can be just so much more enjoyable without it. And what if you just do it this year? What if you just go, right, just this year, I'm not going to drink. Yeah. Do it every other Christmas for the rest of your life. Why don't you just do it this one day in a year? Just try it. Just try it. I think it is really rewarding, and you just get to the end of the day, and rather than being completely sort of comatose on Christmas pudding and too many chocolates and too much wine, just go to bed and not wake up feeling really crap the next day. I don't know. It's up for grabs.
Some would say, Ruth, why wait to feel great?
Oh, God. It's been a while since we've heard that strap line, Ben.
Why wait to feel great? But you know what? If you are, we know that lots of people listen to this who are alcohol free already. We know that there's lots of people that listen to us because they tell us when they join the community, oh, when I started listening to you, I was still drinking. You really helped me kind of build that confidence. You might be that person who's planning to have a glass of champagne at 11 o'clock because it's Christmas Day, and then, you know, maybe have a few this afternoon and then have that kind of horrible full falling asleep on the sofa. Look, if you started today, alcohol-free Christmas is fabulous. Like, remembering every moment is just wonderful. And also, we're about to enter the Christmas gooch, Sharon.
Please never use that term again. Don't. You've said
don't
it.
Google
you've
it.
Gone there.
Don't
never Google,
Google
it.
You know, that Google that's it. Dave, you know that's Dave Coach's surname, don't you?
No, I didn't.
He's Dave Gooch.
How that about that? Yeah. And obviously, in this context, Ruth, we're talking about the gap between Christmas and New Year, aren't we?
I know exactly what you're talking about. I was trying to take us to a pleasant...
let's move on.
Move on.
I mean, if you decided, actually, you know what? It's Christmas morning now. I'm going to be alcohol free. Think about the time you get to New Year, you're getting into it by then. You know, you could start 2024 feeling really proud of yourself that you've done something that you've been meaning to do for ages. You know?
Absolutely. And you know, that's another thing. Starting the new year in some ways is, I just think starting the new year alcohol free without a hangover, I just think it's so liberating and such a lovely warm feeling to not feel that kind of anxiety and that beating yourself up and telling yourself what a terrible person you are because you've got horrible hangover anxiety. It's really, really worth it. And I just think, why not give it a go? Just for this year, why not try it? I don't know. Come join us.
We're all normal.
Just do your radio voice then, Ben. Go on.
Come on down and join us, everybody. That's my Tony
Blackburn.
We're
not weird, he said then. We're not weird, Ruth.
We haven't got long left and we've got lots of questions. Should we do some quick fire questions? From the chat box?
Somebody says what happened on the fishing trip.
That's not come in. Maria has said, what is your best advice for sustained sobriety, Ruth?
Well, I always think it's a good thing when there are those wobbly moments when they come to fast forward the tape, which I know a lot of people say, and just go around, just imagine how you are going to feel if you do have a drink now. And to just, I think the reality is, if you have a drink, you get that instant buzz and it'll last for, I don't know, 15 minutes. And then you've got to have another one to keep it topped up. Where's it going to end? So I think it's sort of about looking ahead and just looking at the consequences. I just feel this permanent sense of relief, and that keeps me going. This relief that life is just so much better without it.
I love that. Yeah, that word comes up a lot, relief. Absolutely. it's like, oh, thank God I'm still doing this. another question for you, Ruth. Tracy says, how do you navigate when others are drinking? Once they're four drinks down, I feel we're not on the same page. Any advice? I feel your sister. I know where she's coming from on that.
I've got to say, you know, when people start repeating themselves and you find yourself going, yeah, you said, yeah, you told me that. Oh, and you just have to go, I think you have to go, that was me. I've been there.
Yeah.
And I'm not there now. And I'm so grateful that I'm not there now. And I just have a bit of empathy, but also just think, I can go home. I don't have to stay. I don't have to stay here. I mean, it depends what the situation is, isn't it? If you're at a party, you can just go and you don't even have to tell anyone. You can just disappear. Nobody will notice anyway. They'll have all forgotten. But I think I think also you have to look after yourself. And I think if you're early days of not drinking, it's probably not a good idea to be around people who are getting really drunk. I think that's probably not a good idea early days. But then after a while, you just get into your own groove and you just sort of like put up with the repetitions.
You've got one here, which is a Gavin and Stacey related question, not about fish and chip. Is Larry Lamb as handsome in real life as he is on screen? Asks Niall, asking for a friend.
They have good genes in that family, don't they? Because George's
George is gorgeous. I did first work experience placements was with George. And he came in, yeah, and he was at BBC Six Music.
Oh,
and he
walked
in the studio and he smelt great as well. And I just kind of looked at him. And look, I'm a heterosexual man who's married and I have a child, and you know, but I just thought, my God, you are a dreamboat. He was just... I just stared at him for a while and it was really weird, especially as you're the work experience boy trying to make a good impression. But is Larry as handsome in real life as he is on screen?
He doesn't look any different to me. I think he's a handsome man, yeah. On and off.
Amazing. There we go. Thank you, Niall.
Time for one final. Shaz, do you think?
Susan says lots of people who are interviewed on the podcast talk about the huge drinking culture within their industry. So we've had people on the pod from just about every industry going. Susan says, what's the drinking culture like in yours, Ruth?
I think you're right. I think it's pretty much everywhere, isn't it? There are, I suppose it's like, you know, like with music, if you're performing at night and then the natural thing is to go to the bar. If you're in the theatre, then you go to the bar afterwards, but not everybody does it. And also you have to be, a lot of people are very conscious of the fact that they, you know, they're going to be on screen or they're going to be on stage. They're going to have their energy about them. So I would say it's just the same as with all professions. Some people do and some people don't. So, yeah.
One final question from Ben in Liverpool, which is, are you happy that you decided to come on Over the Influence after we nagged you for months?
Oh.
Because obviously you're right, it is in the public domain.
No, of course I'm happy. What used to make me laugh is that I used to hear you mention sometimes, and you'd go on about, you'd say this A-list. I mean, hey, you may not have been talking about me.
Ruth, we were.
But I was just like, I'm really not. You're going to be so disappointed. And I was thinking, people might be going, oh, I wonder who it is. Oh, I wonder who it is. And then it's Ruth Jones. Oh.
Listen, you're A-list to us, Ruth. You absolutely are. You really, really are. I've also got a question to squeeze in before we wrap up. Now, as you've said, you know, you are a big fan of Over the Influence, and that delights myself and Ben massively. What delights us even more is that you wrote a little ditty to sing along with the OTI theme tune. I just wondered if you could just bash that out for us here on the podcast. Oh, bit of a big ask.
I sent it to you, didn't I? Have you not got the copy of it? Because that's got the actual music on it.
Hang on.
Context. I also want to say I love the music of the podcast. I find it really, really uplifting, and it never, ever annoys me. You know, like you think it's, you know, you hear it every week. Like some music, I just got to fast forward it. But I love the Over the Influence theme music. I just think it's really kind of gets you going and it's lovely. And I just, I couldn't help it, but I did put words to the tune, which I sang to you once, Sharon, didn't I?
You did. It's on a voice recording, and I've gone back, and I don't know we've got a little group chat on the go, me and you. We've also got a private group chat because we are close personal friends. And
it's not as good as with the music.
But it was
because you use the phrase wanging on and on a lot. So let me see if I can remember it. Do you know what?
We'll send it to us on a voice note. Please do send it to us. because it's my brother Tom that wrote the music for Over the Influence. And he will be absolutely delighted to hear that you like it. And I know that the first thing he'll want to do is overlay your singing to the theme tune.
Hang on.
That's just more private voice.
You see, that's what I was going to do. Start playing some voice notes, but I could play something absolutely terrible between us, Ruth.
Fucking hell, that Ben.
That Ben,
there's
what
my editing on the podcast.
What it was, you know, wanging on and on. It's a hard day. Wanging on and on. Sharon Hartley. Wanging on and on. And Ben Anderson. Wanging on and on. Makes me happy. Wanging on and on. We're alcohol free.
Hey! One of the weirdest moments of my life again. It was weirder in a car park in South Wales.
But it's one of the best. It's one of the best moments.
Lovely.
That's so good. Ruth Jones, it has been an absolute pleasure. And just to echo what Ben said, we're so grateful that you've decided to chat to us on Over the Influence. It's wonderful to have you listening. It's fabulous that you have become a friend of OTI and ours as well. Thank you so very, very much. And from the hearts of our bottoms, Merry Christmas, Ruth Jones.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Can I just say to you two, it's been a joy every week to listen to you. I get so excited when I see there's a new episode. And I think what you have done for people, you'll probably never really appreciate how much you have helped people. You'll never, ever know. But I know that it's got such heart, the podcast, such heart, and it's so non-judgmental and so full of joy. And please, may you long continue to do so.
Thank you.
Happy Christmas. Wanging on and on. Sharon Hartley. Wanging on and on. And Ben Anderson. Wanging on and on. Makes me happy. Wanging on and on. We're alcohol free.